And then you look at what's happening in Germany, amazingly, when people criticize Israel. I mean, Jewish Holocaust survivors criticizing Israel are told they cannot speak. They cannot address student assemblies, for example.
Yeah. Now, in Germany, they have this concept called the Staatsraison, which really means, you know, the reason of the state. And understandably, to make amends for the Holocaust, Germany feels they have to do something. But they've interpreted that to mean just defend the Israeli government regardless of what it does, which I think is a huge mistake. What I've written about actually in the German press is that they should take from the Holocaust the importance of upholding rights that would prevent atrocities from like this from ever happening again. But you can't uphold rights and have a Palestinian exception. Because then, you know, next there'll be a Jewish exception, and then there'll be exception for other people. And so the only way to do it is to uphold rights for everybody. That's not the German government's approach. They just think they're going to defend Netanyahu and the far-right extremists in the Israeli government, regardless of what they do. I think that's a misunderstanding of the proper lessons of the Holocaust.
And I think that's clear from your book. The overall message, never again, means never again for anyone, anywhere. Righting Wrongs is Kenneth Roth's new book, 3 decades on the front lines battling abusive governments. Kenneth Roth is now a visiting professor at the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs, served for nearly 3 decades as the executive director of Human Rights Watch. This is Democracy Now! To see the full speeches of the Palestinian Israeli...
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
K-B-O-O
Portland.
Listen,
laugh,
learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations of programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the first Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is the 3rd of March. It is 8.02 a.m., and welcome. Thank you so much for listening and being a part of this radio community, this community that includes listeners and members and people who are concerned about what's happening in their world. So thank you so much for joining us, and let me give you our phone numbers so you can call and be a part of the conversation this morning. Our airroom phone number is 503-231-8187. So store that phone number in the place of remembrance and call to participate in our program this morning. So thank you so much for joining us, and this is the beginning of March. This is the beginning of March, and someone referred referenced me in an old saying yesterday that they said it's old because many people don't know it. It's something like Mart comes in like a lion and out like a lamb. And some folks never heard of that. So we'll see how the weather is in your location. And I can tell you in one sense, we are living in some stormy times. So things are very, very strange. But I want to encourage you to listen and to participate. One of the things I'm interested this morning is hearing from people about ways in which they are coping, dealing, resisting, fill in the blank, these times that we are living in. And we all confront things differently. I would like to share with you a couple of observations and a couple of things about how people are resisting, and I would like to hear your thoughts as well. First, I want to refer to an opinion piece by Jonathan Capehart from February 25th, writing for, yeah, I know, but the Washington Post, but they still allow opinions. Well, that's another story. So anyway, here's Jonathan Capehart, where he talks about resistance, talks about his take on how people are maybe confronting, challenging the times we are living in. And here, his observation of an encounter he had. He writes, "As a summer intern on NBC's Today Show many decades ago, I used to talk with the anchors and reporters doing the job I hoped to do one day. The generosity of time and counsel fueled my aspirations. That's why, whenever I get a message from an intern at the Post asking to meet, I try to make it happen. Last fall, Juan Ben Jr. came by my office. What began as a routine, 'tell me how you got here' conversation turned into one of the most powerful Black history moments I've ever encountered. Juan graduated from Howard University last fall with a Bachelor of Arts degree in Media Journalism and Film Communication. He was the managing editor of The Hilltop, Howard's renowned student newspaper. And before his stint at the Post as a 2024 academic year fellow in the Metro section, Juan was the inaugural Springboard Journalism Fellow at BBC News last year, covering breaking news of politics and climate change. Today, he's interning at Politico magazine, but he'll be back at the Post this summer. The first thing I noticed when Juan knocked at my glass door was his crisp, tan, short sleeve shirt with his name stitched into a patch on the chest. An old school work shirt that struck me as an appropriately Gen Z retro. He came prepared with smart, probing questions befitting someone who had already had significant experience in serious newsrooms and wanted to know how to build a career in news. Conversation came easily. Two gay Black men in journalism, one advanced in his career, the other just starting out. It was only natural that, because of our shared backgrounds, our conversations turned personal. Juan told me about his family in Tennessee and spoke with great reverence about his father. That he did so in the past tense led me to ask what had happened to him. Ben Sr. died in a car accident 10 years ago this month when Ben Jr. was only 13 years old. As Juan told me about his father, my eyes focused more intently on his retro shirt. there was the brown stitching, a Juan, in the nameplate on the right. On the left in brown stitching was Knox County Schools Maintenance. What I thought was a kitschy vintage store find was in reality Ben Sr.'s work shirt. He had worked in maintenance for the Knox County school system for 37 years. And his son was telling him how he wears his father's clothes as a way of keeping him close. I got chills. The kind you get when you are bearing witness to something powerful. Sitting before me was the arc of one black family's history. Juan Ben Sr. never went to college, his path not extending beyond eastern Tennessee. But his son was wearing his shirt throughout the offices of the one of the nation's preeminent news organizations in Washington, D.C. I told Juan how moved I was to see him honor his father that way. But I impressed upon him the even greater symbolic power of his clothing choice. When you're black in elite spaces, you're always bringing your family and ancestors with you. Even if they are not physically with you, you feel them with you because their sacrifices are what propelled you into those spaces. I told him about the first time I brought my mother to an event at the White House during the Obama administration. She was irritated when I insisted that the military aide include her maiden name when we were announced to the President and First Lady. When she asked why, I explained that I wanted the full family name said in the White House, and I wanted the President of the United States to hear it. More than two centuries of slavery, followed by nearly a century of segregation and violence under Jim Crow, make black history a history of horrific pain and trauma that continues to reverberate. Thanks to the abolition and civil rights movements that ended both ugly institutions, black history is also a history of resilience and triumph in the face of efforts, even today, to deny our role and place in the greatness of this country. De jure, segregation ended with the passage of the Civil Rights Act just 61 years ago. That's why black people celebrate when we see us in spaces that were once off limits, doing things that stretch the definition of who we are or broaden the imagination of what we can achieve. It is a reminder that black history is undeniably American history. Black people make history in this country every day through loud protests and massive marches, through powerful prose and stage performances that give voice to our experience. But more often than not, black history is made more quietly by acts like wearing your late father's shirt to work. That was Jonathan Capehart, an opinion piece in the Washington Post, published February 25th, 2025. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. I read that piece by Jonathan Capehart sort of as a conclusion of certainly Black History Month, but also as a reminder to me and hopefully a suggestion to you to explore, to think, and name those people, those persons, those communities which continue to inspire you, continue to enable you to be who you are. In these times of swift radical changes in the understanding of our government and how we interact with one another and indeed with other countries in the world, it is important to not only highlight those who are resistant in ways that many people know, but ways in which history is being made quietly with acts of courage. So I'm asking you to think about individuals or community who continue to inspire you, those signs of resistance or things in which inspire you, that enable you to do what you are called to do. I am reminded of two stories in terms of looking at persons and communities who continue to inspire you and, quite frankly, help give me the strength to carry on. I'll share with you two stories. First, my paternal grandfather was an immigrant to the United States. He and my grandmother were immigrants from Barbados in the early part of the 20th century. And my grandfather, I called him Granddaddy, was very proud of, as he should have been, of their journey and ability to come to a country, to raise a family, to have a home, a house, and to raise and see not only his children but his grandchildren. But Granddaddy was always an immigrant, and spoke with a strong Bajan accent, and so people knew that perhaps he wasn't born in this country. And oftentimes he would get into arguments or disagreements with friends and stuff like that. But Granddaddy would always say, conclude an argument with, "I am an American citizen." And thus by saying that he has a right to be here. So in one sense, my grandfather is an inspiration for me, because he revealed in his action, in his life, that we all have voice and we all have things to do. The other story I'll share with you is my maternal grandmother. My mother's mother was born in Virginia, raised in the Jim Crow South, and eventually was part of the migration of blacks to the North. And she migrated to New York City. There she raised a family, and her life story in itself is kind of fascinating in itself, in terms of people she knew and encountered. But this emphasis I want to place is how my grandmother influenced me in ways she may not have been aware of. Reading Jonathan Capehart's story, I'm reminded of how those who are older than us can inform us in many different ways. In the summer of 1964, I was a young boy, and my family visited family in the South for the first time. those of you who are aware, in the summer of 1964 was the year that President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, which enabled the desegregation of public spaces. And so my grandmother, after that legislation was signed in July 1964, said, okay, let's test it. And so we all got into the car. I don't know how many, it was a bunch of us. My grandmother, her brother, her sister-in-law, who were lived and raised in the South, in the rural South. And we all got into the car to go into town to see whether or not we would be served at a lunch counter. My grandmother got out the car and led us into the establishment. But her sister-in-law, my Aunt Rebecca, who grew up in the rural South, had no education, but a strong woman in her own right. In terms of how she negotiated her life, and as a, in many ways, but my Aunt Rebecca stayed in the car. It was almost as if when we looked at her face, she was frozen in fear, and she was unable to get out of the car to go into the lunch counter, or even though her sister-in-law, my grandmother, said it's okay, it's all right. But the legacy of oppression, the trauma of it, made it impossible for my Aunt Rebecca to move. And so I have these two people in my lives. My grandmother, who was bold and bodacious, and was fearless in many ways, and my paternal grandfather, who was bold and bodacious in many ways, and fearless, serves as inspirations for me. So who are people you admire, particularly on women as we begin this month, Women's History Month, who are examples of courage or resistance? Who or what movements do you want to spotlight? What are ways in which you are able to be encouraged and to move forward? Give us a call and share those who inspire you, individual stories perhaps, but may also be of movements that continue to inspire you. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And perhaps, again, these thoughts began to blossom within me as I not only recall the chaos that's been happening in our world in the last few, well, forever, but particularly in the last few months, and particularly I'm speaking in terms of the United States and the new administration, which has challenged and shifted things in such a mighty way that it is maybe impossible to understand where we are. So in this machine gun, like fast-paced way of releasing radical proposals that seek to destroy government and any trust in government that may still exist, I'm sure you are paying attention. And what are you doing? Where do you find influence or inspiration? And who are the things and persons or movement that inspire you? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. But first, let's hear from Jeff, who has some thought to share. Good morning, Jeff. How are you this morning? Hello. Let's try that again. Good morning. We're seeming to having a little bit of problem. I'll try one more time. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. And a question I ask, who are movements or individual who continue to inspire you? I shared some story. First, I began by reading an article by Jonathan Capehart, and then I shared some personal stories. But let's hear what's on your mind. So let's try Jeff one more time. Good morning, Jeff. Are you there?
Good morning, Cecil. I'm so sorry. There seemed to be some malfunction on the telephone lines. I hope you're well.
I am. And how are you today?
And I continue to be dangerously well, but
ooh,
thanks very much for asking.
Okay.
I just have a brief bit of input here because of a story from my own past,
mm-hmm.
but well past my past, long before I was born. My late mother attended the National Christian College in Kansas City, Missouri. And she attended in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was actually before Board v. Kansas decision, Brown decision. But she was at the National Christian College in Kansas City, Missouri. And at that time, just after the war, there was a plethora of students from all over at the National Christian College, including a couple of Japanese girls who had come over from Japan, and one had his family had been interned, and a couple of black girls as well as in her class, in my mother's class. And the girls would go out to the cafe, the diner, the public eating spot of the day, and they sat down at a booth. There were three white girls and their black friend, and the waitress had the audacity to come up and say, "Well, I can serve you, you, and you, but I can't serve you." And she pointed at my mother's dear friend.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, all of the girls got up and left.
Wow.
And I'm not saying anything at all. I'm not saying my mother is a hero.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying what she did in that moment with her friends in solidarity was to say, no, we aren't going to tolerate this. And you will see nothing from us, and you will probably never see us again, because this is not the way we choose to live. We are students at the National Christian College,
mm-hmm.
and we hope that you understand that's who we are.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. And I think those stories, this story is powerful. And, you know, individual groups can make a statement. And the fact that, you know, 60, 70 years later, you're able to share this story reveals to me that it continues to resonate and it continues to inspire. So I appreciate you for sharing this story. Thank you, Jeff.
I hope also that this can go a little further out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to tell you this story, and I hope that your day brings you nothing but pleasure.
Thank you. And may you have a great, great day as well. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. And we just heard from Jeff, who shared what I thought was an inspiring story of an act of courage of young women who saw an injustice and were aware of that they needed to do something, and aware that small acts of defiance, of courage, is critical. In this age when so much is being overturned, these acts of bravery and of courage, small they may, which they may seem to be, are acts of bravery which continue to inspire many, many of us. And You can tell those stories to one another. A friend of mine said, you know, people are doing things all over. They wrote about a woman with a sign at a Tiger Tesla dealer, which says, Teslas, funds, felons, fascists. It's one little act of resistance. Now, it may not convince people who are going to that dealer to not buy the car, but it is a woman who's saying that I have a voice and that I will be heard. So Paul, thank you for sharing that, that little act of community resistance. And Paul reminds me that there are community groups who are popping up all over the place. No, I was referring to Paul. Oh, okay, yes. No, yes, I was referring to Paul, yeah, not Jeff, but Paul had dropped me a note. He said, there are people who are doing things all over the place. Paul also noted that there are one or two dozen folks in Malala holding signs at a church. There's a church in, he says, in Portland where people are holding up signs of protest. And folks are using all types of efforts in which to show that they are resisting. So what are things that you find inspiring? Who are persons who continue to influence you, who continue to inspire you? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. I began this morning by sharing a little bit from an article from Jonathan Capehart who noticed someone in his place of work who was wearing a shirt, and in it it testified to his bond with his late father. And as Mr. Capehart says at the end of his article, Black history is made more quietly by acts like wearing your late father's shirt to work. So there are things that people are doing and people are doing and saying that are making a change. Give us a call at 503-231-8187 and share with all of us who are those persons, those movements that continue to inspire you in a time when there is so much craziness, so much that needs to be confronted. There are things that people are doing, whether it is a term-limited governor from a state in New England who said to the President of the United States that her state is resisting some of the policy of the president's administration, and she said, we will see you in court. Now, the audacity, particularly because I think how misogynist this president is, doesn't like the strength of women. So I think that's an example of this one woman, and she was powerful. She's the governor. So, but signs in which people continue to show signs of resistance, whether it's Juan Ben Jr. wearing his late father's shirt to work, whether it is Jeff's mother being a part of a small group of college students in during the period of Jim Crow and saying we will resist this, or whether it is being a lone demonstrator in front of a Tesla dealership in Tiger carrying a sign that says Tesla's funds fascists. Let's see here what our next caller has to say. Let's go to Tangent. Tangent, how are you this morning?
I'm wonderful, and I hope you're wonderful, with two L's also. Wonder, full of wonder.
Full of wonder, I like that. Yeah, full of wonder.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to tie in with what I spoke last week. And first, I want to say that another woman called at some point and like that lady tangent, and I didn't take that as a any kind of a criticism or whatever. I didn't take it any negative way. I'm glad that my mother put that femme aspect into my life. I like to bake. I like to do, you know, gardening is considered sometimes women's, you know. But here we go. I wanted to tie in with that story I told about the bully on the bridge, and the fact that I was short didn't mean he'd picked on other people, even maybe that could be his size. But the fact that I was short and was standing up, I think that speaks something. And again, I got that from my mom. But what I wanted to mention is there's a follow-up, an afterword. And I worked with this guy, Ronnie Tanner was his name, and we were hauling bricks at a construction site for apartment buildings. And this was like just 3 or 4 years later, right out of high school, and he was like really down, you know, in the mouth. Like, he wasn't like the big, tall, tough guy that he was before. I mean, you see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
Life had shown him, it wasn't only me, of course. He must have had some other things, setbacks or what have you. But, yeah, so I would, like, wish that on this present-day bully. I want to get into the Zelensky thing. I want to say, first of all, how the press is misconstruing it. I heard both the BBC on NPR and my wife listens to Fox News in the morning, so I hear some of that. They're saying this clash, this outburst between Zelensky and Trump. It was no clash. He was the most poised, reserved. He listened to their tirades, their beratement. It was like, you've heard of a bully pulpit. We've all heard of it. If that isn't state church, by the way. But this is like a bully pit bull. Vance was Trump's dog, right? And did you, what's a body language? You know, if Zelensky had a hat, it would have been in his hands. His hands remained folded at his lap. He rarely gestured. Trump was like, looked like he almost wanted to push him out of his seat. And he talked to him like he was a little boy, like he was the daddy scolded. I'm sure he didn't say, is that perfectly clear? But
Right. Yeah. He
could have. But the other thing I want people to see is that everything that Vance or Trump accused him of, they are guilty of. The guilty think other people are doing what they're doing. So he says, and you went back on your agreement when Zelensky had just pointed out how Putin had violated the agreement many times.
Yes.
Oh, and this is really important. He said, at one point, Vance said, you're trying to use the media to stage an event here. And that's exactly what they had done.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was complete. And to be asked to leave the White House, and I saw when Zelensky got into the Cadillac to take him back to the airport or wherever, he was like, man, get me out of here.
Sure. Yeah, I thank you for your observations, and certainly, the president and vice president, it was their house. They were in control. And as you, I'm sure people have seen over and over again in terms of the body language and how they those people interacted with one another and the. You know, it's par for the course now, that bullying.
It's too kind. It was hardly any interaction. But getting on Zelensky's part, he was not treated as a president of a country. And then I guess, what is it? What's his name? Secretary of State says, well, he might just have to go. Like, what? You believe in democracy. This country says it does. And then what? Any democratically elected leader who will not toe our line and give us all their minerals for nothing will be pushed out by the CIA.
Oh.
It's happened. 5 countries in Africa over the last 10 years have had so-called coups.
Well, you know, the more things change, more things remain the same. So, hey, thank you, Tangent, for calling.
With that, brother.
Okay.
Peace as always.
Take care of yourself and have a wonderful FULL day. Thank you so much. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM. The last conversation we just had with Tangent, who was sharing some of his thoughts in terms of bullies. He began by last week, he shared an incident he had when he was a child with a bully. And then we extended the conversation this today with his observation about the interaction in the Oval Office between the presidents of Ukraine and the United States this weekend. Give us a call, 503-231-8187, and talk about how you are responding, what people should respond, and particularly who are movements or individuals who continue to inspire you by way in which they resist. I began this morning by reading an article from Jonathan Capehart, where he observed the quiet way in which a person show their resistance. You have something to say as well, so give us a call. But in the meantime, let's hear from Santiago. Good morning, Santiago. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How about you, Cecil?
I'm doing all right. So give me some wisdom, Santiago. I need to hear.
You know, honestly, like, just, you know, the thing that gives me hope is the voices of truth who still continue to, who still continue to speak about, you know, the atrocities of, you know, that our country has committed, you know, even amidst the push to go to, you know, even amidst the push where, you know, we were trying to get, you know, Kamala Harris elected, because at the end of the day, you know, like, we're constantly being told that, you know, our salvation will come from above, you know, and as many of Trump's supporters are finding out, that is in fact not the case. You know, much of the stuff coming from above is just, you know, like bird poop, I guess you could say. It's even if Kamala Harris was president, we'd still have issues, maybe not the ones we're currently experiencing, but we would still have them. And I'm just grateful for those people who never stopped speaking the truth to power, even when it was inconvenient to do so. But I think more than anything, I look towards the people who are finding strength in their anger, you know, right now.
Okay.
You know, we're constantly being. Go ahead.
No, just I wanted you to expand that. Finding strength in their anger. Yeah.
Well, you know, anger is, you know, a lot of people confuse anger for hatred, mm-hmm. you know, and while they might seem the same, you know, anger comes from a place of love, whereas hatred comes from a place of fear. Mm. And, you know, it's the people who were willing to love, you know, as Martin Luther King said, you know, love is an action. It's not just a milk toast thing, you know. When you really love something, you fight for it.
Right.
And right now we've got a lot of people who say, well, you need to, you know, they're lovers of democracy, but they're just casually letting it fall by the wayside, you know, minute by minute.
Yes.
So they don't really love. They like the idea of loving, but they, you know, but at the end of the day, their love has no action behind it. So it's not real.
Love takes
and,
work.
So the people who are out there angry, you know, they're the ones who are putting love in action, mm-hmm. but we're being told that, you know, that being angry is dangerous, and it absolutely is. But at the end of the day, like, that's what really counts, is like how we truly decide we're going to love.
Now, you
know, are we going to love in a way that that, you know, that we think is love, but it's actually just enabling abusers? Or are we going to actually mm-hmm. love in the way that says, like, you know, I don't care what anyone says, you know, the safety of the people that I love and the people in my community, even if we don't always get along, the safety of all these people is worth more to me than what I think I'm getting by rooting for my team.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I'm not telling black folks or gay folks or queer folks to, like, love Trump supporters. But at the end of the day, what separates Trump supporters from most other people is that they don't see that everyone in their community is their community, including the people that you don't like.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. You don't like, there's a lot of liberals out here who don't like homeless people mm-hmm. and think that homeless people are a problem in the community. But no, homeless people are the community. They're just people yeah. that are an eyesore to you because we're taught that, you know, that poverty is a
poverty is a
moral failing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the land of milk and honey, you know, people dying in doorways and living on the streets, you know, it's like they're constant reminders that the system, while it's not broken, but this is how it functions. This is how you can have people living in houses in the West Hills, is by the immiseration of those living on the streets. And some people don't want to be reminded of that. They want to live in abject bliss and ignorance until it shows up on their doorstep and they can't ignore it. And mm-hmm. you know, we just can't afford that. You know, it's some people need to be woken up with a fire hose. But either way, they need to be woken up.
Right, right.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's honestly what I'm really seeing right now, and what I put my, you know, I mean, if there's anything to put faith in, it's just the general goodness of people. You know, it's the idea of fascism is just to stomp out any kernel of goodness or kindness.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
That's how they operate. That's why they tell simple stories of good and evil. That's why they. Because goodness in any capacity is a threat to fascism.
Wow.
Yeah.
Profound.
Yeah.
Hey, well.
Yeah.
No. I'm just thinking on your words. So.
No, you're good, man. You know. But yeah, I just want to encourage everyone that it seems hopeless, but. At the end of the day, you know, black and brown folks have survived for 500 years. You know, we indigenous folks have lived through their apocalypse, and we're still here.
Right, that's right.
We've lived through our Holocaust. You know, black folks have lived through their Holocaust, through all of their things. You know, through all of their tribulations, they're still here. You know, we have to have that kind of long suffering. We have to have that patience, and not patience in the sense that we need to put up with stuff, but patience to understand that, you know, what we're really trying to do right now is grow trees, and trees take time.
It takes time, yeah. And as you remind us that we need to hear those stories, to know those stories, and be aware that. That's our history in terms of being overcoming and resisting. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate you, man. Have a wonderful day.
You as well. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Our numbers here, the phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Last caller, Santiago, was sharing some of their thoughts about inspiration and where we find hope. Where do you find hope in terms of these dangerous times we are living in? He spoke of anger, and anger is not necessarily bad. And he left before I got, wanted to get preachy on him and wanted to quote the scripture that said, you know, it's okay to be angry, but just as long as you don't let it go too far, or angry but not sin. But let's hear what some other people have to say. Let's go to Mark. Good morning, Mark. Thank you for calling. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Cecil. I want to recommend two articles that I think will help clarify our situation.
Yeah.
One is a book titled When the Clock Broke by John Gantz. It was published in June of 2024. And he focuses on con men, conspiracists, and the America that fell apart in the 1990s. He emphasizes Pat Buchanan, who was kind of a deranged thinker who wanted to put to build a fence around America. And David Duke.
Oh yes.
And Ross Perot. It's a very engaging book, and people can read reviews on the internet. Some people think that that Trump might be Pat Buchanan incarnate at just the right time.
Yeah.
Now the other incredible article is The Theory of Stupidity by Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Oh.
And Bonhoeffer says that stupidity is a form of resistance to critical thinking. That it's an inability for change, for new viewpoints. It's a refusal to think critically, and it's more dangerous than ignorance. I think we face a problem of mass stupidity.
Right.
You know, a desire to be with the strong man or to be with the majority. So listening, reading, and learning from Dietrich Bonhoeffer is so important.
Yeah, and I think it's, I don't want to interrupt you, but just to give some background for Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, a German Lutheran pastor who opposed Nazism, was executed by the Nazis for his part in the resistance movement. And so he knew what stupidity was. I mean,
absolutely. And he organized an underground confessing church.
Yes.
When the established church became conformist, became obedient to Hitler, what an incredible example that is. And you know, Kierkegaard was similar to that, and he wanted to introduce New Testament Christianity to comfortable Christianity. So these are two very important persons for us in order to revive consciousness and a sense of urgency.
Well, thank you so much for directing us to Dietrich Bonhoeffer and for telling us about When the Clock Broke
by John Gantz.
Right.
Yes. Very good. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, and I have something else to put on my to-read list. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Last caller was just sharing a couple of recommendations. One, a book, When the Clock Broke, which seems to be like, it could be a very good read about, talk about the 1990s and the unrest and the rise of the radical right, with reference to such persons as Pat Buchanan and David Duke and others that we recall from the 1990s. And also he referenced Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who wrote about stupidity and how challenging it is to interact with stupidity. Things that we should know and things that we should observe. So who are those who inspire you? At last call, he shared some books, some authors that we should know about and read. Before that, a caller reminded us of the people who are doing good work in their communities all over. So whether it is in your workplace, whether it's in your school, whether it is in your neighborhood, things are changing all over. So what gives you hope? And whether you believe, as caller Santiago, in the goodness of humanity and our ability to, and well, nobility to do right, to change the course that we are engaged in. And I think many people believe in the ability to work in their community, and that's how change begins to be made. I want to ask all of you to try to think of and identify not only individuals, but also maybe groups who might, who are trying to explore, trying to do things in a new way. And just as our caller suggested some book, and callers suggested actions, there are many things that people are doing in your community. So I'm asking you, if there is an organization or a person that need to be heard because of who they are or what they are doing, please drop me a line just to, so that I may ask them something and see if they can share with the wider community things that they are doing. Because everyone, we all need the inspirations and things that we can do to make changes. Even as Jonathan Capehart, at the beginning of this program this morning, I mentioned his interaction with an intern there. And lo and behold, that interaction was transformative. Because it reminded Mr. Capehart, there are different ways in which people make change, in which people remember. So continue to honor those people all around you who are doing things that you admire. Be willing to say thank you. Be willing to thank the person who's standing on the corner. You see them every day with a loan sign. I think acts of generosity and acts of courage are taking place all over, and that in fact, as one of our caller talks about, that we all are able to resist, to stand up to bully, as Tangent might told us about how he was on that bridge with the bully and had a confrontation and be able to stand. So we are able to stand, and regardless of what the autocrats and those in power will have us to say, think, all is not lost, resistance is not futile, and my thanks to Star Trek, but also there's lots that we are doing and that people continue to do. So stay tuned to your community radio station, because independent radio, independent media is so important, especially in these times. Thank you for being a part of this conversation this morning. Continue to do the great things that you continue to do. Encourage, lift up one another. Stay tuned to more programming here on your community radio station. Thank you. Have a good day. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I will speak with you next time.
This is KBOO Portland.